Good morning and welcome back to the Palmetto Family Matters Show. I'm Randy Page and I'm joined by my co-host Josiah Ducharme, who serves as our communications director here at Palmetto Family. It's his first time joining us here on the podcast, and he helps lead our messaging and outreach as we work to inform and engage families across South Carolina. We're glad you're with us as we unpack some of the latest developments shaping South Carolina, from politics at home to cases being argued before the United States Supreme Court that could have national implications.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be on here for the first time. It's a real privilege. So today we're going to be talking about three key topics that are affecting our state here in South Carolina. The first is going to be the upcoming special elections, and those are taking place across the Palmetto State. New polling in South Carolina's governor's race, and of course, the important Supreme Court case. We'll be going through all those today.
Great.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's get into our first subject. Is going to be the special elections here in South Carolina. So tell me about it. What's driving them, and what do they tell us about local political momentum?
Sure. It's really interesting to actually have four different special elections right now. You know, I was at a candidate forum the other night, and the candidates were talking about, you know, that the general election for that House seat is December the 23rd. So I imagine a lot of people are going to be voting early on that one.
Yeah.
But they will actually be seated to serve in the General Assembly from January to next May. But then they'll also have to run again to win in June primary, possibly, and November election. So it's just going to be a perpetual campaign for them coming up. But really to have four different seats is very unusual. You know, we start off with Senate District 12, which is Greenville and Spartanburg counties. Senator Roger Nutt is a senator there. He resigned because of health reasons. Just an incredible friend to me personally and really to conservatives across the state. So there is a three-way primary to replace him on the Republican side. And the early voting has actually already opened in Senate District 12. Adjacent to Senate District 12 and part of Senate District 12 is the House District that I actually live in. That's House District 21. And so State Representative Bobby Cox had resigned his seat to run for that state Senate seat and then ultimately made the decision not to run for the state Senate seat. So there are four Republicans running for that seat. Early voting has also opened in that particular seat. And its election, as I mentioned already, is December the 23rd for the general. And then we have House District 88, which is in Lexington County, and it's on the same schedule as the Senate race in Spartanburg, the House race in Greenville, and then you've got this race here in Lexington. So early voting has opened on it as well. And then finally, the fourth and final is in House District 98, which is Dorchester County in the Lowcountry, with the resignation of Representative Chris Murphy. And so the timing for that is 2 weeks behind everybody else. So early voting has not opened up there, but will open up soon. So got a lot happening across the Palmetto State here at the end of the calendar year, which is a very busy time. And so, you know, typically that means that there's going to be fewer voters that show up. Fewer voters typically show up for a special anyway, but them being so close to Thanksgiving and to Christmas, it's really going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, tell me, for the knowledge of the general voter, are these special elections mostly about filling vacancies in these positions, or are they actually telling of the shifts happening politically?
These really are purely vacancies that have happened, you know. It will be interesting to see when all of the 124 seats in the state house come open next year. You know, filing will be in March, and so you'll see a lot of jockeying there. There are no state senate seats up in 2026. They will all be back up in 2028. So, but yeah, these are purely to fill vacancies. But to have this many vacancies at one time is very, very unusual.
Yeah. Is there something in particular, an issue that's motivating those voters in those districts that you've recognized, like gambling bills or anything like that, education?
I mean, it's been interesting. You know, like I said, I went to the candidate forum the other night, and so there were a lot of questions being asked back and forth, whether it was, you know, on the economic side of, you know, cutting income tax, getting rid of income tax.
Sure, right.
Whether it was, you know, gambling, whether it was pro-life questions, whether it was about roads, you know, the glorious state of South Carolina roads that we often talk about off air.
Right.
And so those were just a lot of things that were, you know, being asked about. And, you know, the four candidates in House District 21, you know, went back and forth, and it was just a really, really good event, and they really didn't know how many people were going to show up, and over 100 people showed up in a firehouse, you know, right there on a very rainy Monday night in Greenville County. So I think people are interested to meet these candidates because some of the candidates aren't super well known, and so they're getting their name out. Others have been, you know, actively involved, so it'll just be interesting to see who shows up. And just because of the nature of a special election, a few people can really tip an election one way or another.
Right. So do you think the results of these smaller elections are going to be telling of what we're going to see in 2026 as an election year overall, or are they fairly inconsequential?
I mean, I think they could show us a few things. Most of the districts are pretty Republican. And so, you know, you may see, you know, more fiscally conservative versus not as fiscally conservative, or, you know, the traditional fault lines that are, you know, discussed right now, whether it's Freedom Caucus, non-Freedom Caucus. And I think you're seeing that some in 21. I don't know how it's playing out in the others. I just know I'm getting an awful lot of mail right now. So it's just interesting to watch and to read.
Sure. So, okay, to wrap up this kind of topic about special elections, how can Christians be actively involved in this kind of field?
Sure. I think one of the best things about a special election is, you know, typically it is one race that's on in your area.
Right.
And so you can really drill down, get to meet the candidate, you know, ask questions, go to events. You know, because like the one event I went to, each of the candidates are having their own events. I think there may be another joint one here soon as well. But I think in each of the different districts, you know, the candidates are getting out there. They're going to places, you know, connect with them online, see where they're going to be, ask them questions, give them a phone call. I mean, they want to talk to voters because I think they do understand that, particularly in a special election, very few people can switch it one way or another.
Right.
And so being able to talk to people who are interested and engaged as voters, they want to do that and they're happy to do it.
Sure. Well, that's great. So that was a great conversation about the special elections. Now, I have a couple questions for you about the governor polling, because the race is, we're getting into the crunch time, of course, as we look ahead to the legislative session. So new polling shows some interesting movement as far as the governor's race is concerned. What stands out to you about those numbers?
It's early.
Okay.
It's really early.
Right.
And so, you know, typically at this time, it's you want to look at trajectory. You know, are candidates moving up? Are they moving down? Are they staying static? You know, this is just incredibly early in an election season to really put lots of stock in polling. Obviously, polling right now is really just a measure of name ID. And so the more well-known you are, the better you should do in polling. You know, I think the interesting thing to look at particularly is, you know, how many people know them? What are their favorability to unfavorability? Are they upside down or right side up?
Right.
And so, you know, because you don't want your unfave to be higher than your fave, because that's a real problem.
Sure.
And so just, you know, kind of looking at things like that. But I mean, it's been a pretty noisy election so far, which considering that we're
right
months away from filing,
sure,
and then months after that to actually have the primary, it's just going to be interesting to see if they're able to keep this pace up, because it's been incredible between the texts, the mail, the social media posts. I mean, it's been something more like a presidential than it has been what you would see for a typical governor's race.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So how much weight or stock should we put in these early polls, or is it mostly just for projection?
I think it's just really directional in a lot of different ways. I do think, candidates are vying for endorsements. And so polling sometimes drives those endorsements. And so, if your name ID is up, you're doing better in polling, that usually will help with endorsements, whether we're talking about state level or national endorsements. So I think that's a lot of what we're seeing played out right now. And, it will be interesting to kind of see ultimately how that does play out. But, in polling right now, you kind of want to look not necessarily at the numbers, but how are they moving? Yeah. And, is there consistently a pack of three or four, or a pack of five, or is it, two tiers, and can someone break out? Right now, my gut is that most of the candidates, any of the candidates, could probably be governor. Now, granted, some of them have a lot better chance at that than others. I'm not naive on that point, but, I think just looking at kind of what the different campaigns are doing, normal people can figure that out. But, this early, with strong fundraising quarters for all of the candidates that I've seen so far, they're going to be able to have the money that they need to get their message out, to get their name ID up.
Yeah, I think this is really important for voters to understand what the early stages of the governor's race is going to look like in South Carolina, and that the polls aren't always reflective of the final result this early. But I think one of the important questions for us to start thinking about is, are there key issues that are emerging in this race that are going to be deciding factors later on? Like, what are the key issues that you're looking at right now for the governor's candidates?
I mean, I think you're hearing the governor's candidates talk a lot about a lot of the same things that I heard at the meeting the other night. Income tax, what's going to happen there? Roads, what's going to happen there? What about, predatory gambling, casinos, online sports betting? What's South Carolina going to look like? What's that going to do for families, for children? Whether it's, parental rights in education, parental rights in healthcare, school choice. I mean, just a lot of those, types of issues, that people are looking at. And I think, as you talk with people, they're interested in a lot of these issues. And some of these issues are very national. But I often say that the government that really affects you the most is the government that's closest to you. And by the way, that's not original with me, in case anyone was asking. But I think, for us to really understand kind of, what's going on there, I think, families are struggling right now. I think anytime you look at, the economy, grocery prices, gas prices, these are all kinds of things that enter into a decision as people kind of, move down to who am I going to support, for governor? Who am I going to support for my state house? Who am I going to support for other issues? And so I think, understanding that, there are a number of issues that are broadly applicable. And then I think for voters of faith, then there are some other issues that enter in, like life, like gambling, more so perhaps than the average voter. And so I think that's kind of a differentiation there.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly where I was going to go next is, do you think that having a faith, family, and these kind of community values together, are those things still heavily influencing voters and the results of these elections in South Carolina?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you listen to pretty much any interview and you're going to hear someone talk about either their faith or the importance of family, or, you know, how they can take government policy and make it more advantageous for, you know, married couples, make it more advantageous for families so that they can grow and prosper, you know, where God has placed them here in South Carolina. So I think you hear that a lot, and probably in South Carolina more than other places, just because we really are the buckle of the Bible Belt. And so I think those are, you know, issues that everyday people who, you know, sit in churches across the state, you know, are interested in, and that's what they're looking to hear from their elected officials and from those who seek to represent them in elected office.
And it seems like, you know, to my understanding, and hopefully to the voters as well, that, you know, these candidates are speaking out of their own experience. They're not trying to buy the votes of the faith community, of the family-focused community. They're really speaking from experience. And I think that's great that they have foundations in South Carolina, but foundations in the church and in these values that they actually do adhere to in their own personal lives. I think that's really important. So, all right, let's move on to this court case. Obviously, you know, this is going to be big for U.S. law. Sure. So tell me about it. Tell me why it's important, and why does it matter for our state in particular?
Sure. Yeah, the Childs case coming out of Colorado is, you know, really an interesting case. You know, it seems like Colorado keeps putting some crazy things up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court keeps saying, nope, can't do that. No, right. Not going to let you do that.
Right.
And so, you know, this particular case, it was actually argued this past Monday at the Supreme Court. And just even listening to portions of the oral arguments, the state of Colorado really had a hard time in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Not that you can ever predict what a court's going to do, and I'm certainly not going to do that here. But it was kind of interesting just to hear the back and forth between the attorneys and the court itself. But it largely goes to, you know, the issue of being able to talk to minors who are really confused about where they are with their sex. And so the state of Colorado really had it so that anyone who was licensed to practice in Colorado could only counsel someone in an affirmational way.
Right.
So that if a young person came in and said, I'm struggling with this, that they were only one way, affirmational, not to, well, why, or, you know, have you thought about this?
Right.
Or, you know, the problems that, you know, we've seen with surgery, with puberty blockers, which, you know, when you look at that as a whole, whether it was the, you know, Cash report coming out of the UK or even some other things that we've seen, you know, you talk about something that's been proven to be horrible for minors.
Right.
That's been horrible.
Yeah.
And so here you have a professional who is seeking to talk to young people, but is only allowed to give it one way.
Right.
And so it's an incredible infringement upon her First Amendment rights. It's really an incredible infringement on her professional speech rights, because if someone were to come in and you could only say you can do this, but I can't even talk to you about this, I mean, that's really, in a lot of ways, that's just malpractice.
Well, it really just seems like it's bad counseling.
It's horrible counseling. It's horrible counseling.
Right.
And so when the state, you know, inserts itself there, to say that you can only do that, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And so whether, you know, you're a counselor in Colorado, whether you're a parent in Colorado, you know, because, you know, if you've got a parent who's struggling and you know that state law is only going to allow the counselor to make an affirmation,
right,
then you're not going to take them there. And so it's just been really interesting to watch. This is, you know, a big deal. You know, because you hear a lot about, you know, conversion therapy, and because they kind of wrapped all that up into one boogeyman, because there obviously were some things that have been used in the past that were horrible.
Right. Sure.
And, but, you know, it just sounds good to, you know, beat something as, you know, conversion therapy. But when you get down to talking about it, it simply is a counselor having the ability to talk to a young person about what their choices are versus only affirming one way, one choice.
Right. So zoom out a little bit and give me the bigger picture. Why is this decision, what are the implications for South Carolina? Is it going to affect us, the way that we interact with future legislation around this type of counseling? What exactly are we looking at here?
You kind of look to California and Colorado to see the craziness that's going to come to South Carolina. And so, you know, we don't necessarily have that here yet. Although some of the cities, you know, like Columbia just recently went through a whole thing on conversion therapy. And so it's here, but it's not here at a statewide level at this point. So I think it gives us pause to go back and to, you know, for the legislature to kind of look at what the Supreme Court does when it makes a decision here. And, you know, just to really make sure that counselors, that, you know, pastors, that people of faith are able to properly counsel those under their care to say, you know, there is another way.
Right.
That's all we're asking.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So how does this fit into the broader national conversation about, you know, individual autonomy, if you will, versus the state's right to implement or, you know, mandate how these situations are dealt with?
Sure. I think, you know, these are minors we're talking about. And so that's a clear differentiation, I think, for most people, is that, you know, you look at, you know, policy that affects minors, you know, because personally, I believe that, you know, if you're going back to talk about some of the transgender stuff, you know, that doing the surgeries, that doing the puberty blockers, I mean, in many ways, I believe that's child abuse.
Okay.
And so I just think that, you know, there are real reasons for us to look out for what can we do to protect minors, what can we do to protect families, whether we're talking about, you know, conversion therapy, whether we're talking about gambling, whether we're talking about, you know, any of these issues that we deal with on a daily basis. That's the concern that we have is, you know, we have a duty to protect.
So for South Carolinians and just people of faith in general, how can we be praying as this kind of case is argued and decided? How can we, you know, be active?
I really want to give a big shout out to Alliance Defending Freedom and to their legal team for what they did here. You know, they really have stood for so many good things. And, you know, I think this is yet another one of their lawsuits against the state of Colorado. And so it's just really encouraging that there's an organization like Alliance Defending Freedom standing up to defend children, to defend parents, and to defend counselors who want to offer hope to these young people who desperately need hope.
Yeah.
They don't need affirmation.
Yeah.
They need hope.
Yeah. We'll absolutely be in prayer for that. But I appreciate your insight and your explanation to that, because I don't think a lot of voters in South Carolina know exactly what's going on all the time. And this is a very important issue because it could have implications in the state immediately.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, absolutely. That's very valuable.
Well, great. Well, I've really enjoyed having you on today. It's been
Thank
good.
You.
And so that's really all we have for the Palmetto Family Matters podcast today. We'll keep following these stories and bringing you updates about the future of faith and family in South Carolina. Be sure to visit palmettofamily.org to stay updated. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if today was good to you and you enjoyed it and learned something, be sure to give us a 5-star review. As always, thank you for tuning in, and God bless.